Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today in the show, we begin with the tumultuous triangle of Stella, Stan, and Blanche in the steamy streets of New Orleans. Yes, it's a streetcar named Desire, and North Carolina A&T State University Theater has a ticket for you to ride, and what a steamy ride it is. Then it's the power of fabric to transport you to that blurry intersection between past and present. Diana Greene's A Dozen Dresses, The Recollection, just blew through the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art, but today you can still catch two outstanding ongoing SICA exhibits and the second half of my interview with Diana. And if you don't like it, well, we'll show you the door, stage door to be exact. Three talented UNCG actors are here to talk about it. Stepping out the stage door all dressed up and hopping on a streetcar, next on Triad Arts Weekend. Back in 1948, A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama. Over 60 years later, the play, full of rich characters and their heart-rending interactions, continues to challenge actors and audiences alike. The award-winning theater department at North Carolina A&T State University is well up to the task, with evening and matinee performances of Streetcar beginning Thursday, February 16th through the 26th in the Paul Robeson Theater on the A&T campus. The play is directed by Associate Professor of Theater Miller Lucky Jr. Today, Miller joins me with the Streetcar View from the director's chair. I was just talking about this program really being beyond entertaining and fun and scintillating. It's David's education continued. And I get to go back to grad school. And in this case, you studied Tennessee Williams in graduate school.
I did. Actually, he was forced upon me. As a young student in graduate school at the University of Florida, I wasn't fond of Tennessee Williams.
Why not?
Well, I started reading his memoirs, and at that time, being a macho man, I discovered he was gay. And at that time, I don't think I was the most open person. That was the me back then. Tennessee was openly aggressive, you know, towards picking up men, and it was just something that didn't seem to fit into my culture. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think I would really enjoy his plays. But after reading them, his one acts and his full lengths, and then, of course, analyzing Streetcar, I fell in love. I became a fan, a great fan of the work.
What is it about his work that makes other playwrights envious, even today?
It's the richness of characters. Of course, like many playwrights, he borrows from personal relatives and family members and friends, and he writes out of his own experiences. For example, Streetcar, he spent most of his time in New Orleans, in the Quarter. Matter of fact, I think he developed the script of Streetcar there. And so he's a truthful playwright, and his dialogue is straightforward and aggressive. It has all the elements: entertainment, conflict, and emotions. And he brings controversy. He deals with issues, you know, he deals with the hardships of the time. Of course, in Streetcar, he brings in a mixture of cultures. Although there weren't African-Americans appearing in the play, except for the one Negro woman, he nevertheless introduces a Polish person, a Spanish person, you know, there's a Mexican lady. So he's really introducing multiculturalism to the world at a time when people stayed apart.
That's interesting, because he wasn't the most open to different folks. People weren't like him.
Well, they say that. But if you read his memoirs, I disagree with it. I thought he was quite liberal and open. I think during those times, depending upon your culture, it was a way of life to treat African Americans in a certain way. Because if you grow up assuming or being taught that African Americans were less than, then it becomes your thinking, and it takes time to realize differently. And so Tennessee treated African Americans much like most of the people treated African Americans in the 40s and 50s.
Researching the man, and that this is part of your graduate studies, looking back on his life and your studies, how about an example of something that really surprised you, or maybe something that gives you an insight into his work that you really treasure?
Well, for many, many years, I've wanted to direct Streetcar. And working at North Carolina A&T State University, one of our most prestigious of universities for theater in the U.S., in addition to it being an historically black college and university, I thought, will I ever get a chance to direct this play at my university. And then once I was talking with a good friend of mine, Sam Art Williams, the former executive producer of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Martin Television.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great man. We had dinner once, and he's very open and candid. And so he began to talk to me about blacks being slave owners and that his family came from a long line of slave owners. They owned black slaves, him being a black man. And so I thought, wow, this is interesting. So I did some more research into it and discovered that there were, in fact, black slave owners. Of course, some bought slaves. They bought their own relatives. But then some actually had black people, you know, being their servants. And when I discovered that, I said, okay, wait a minute. Now there's an opening. There's an opening. Maybe I could do Streetcar. And then, of course, I researched Poland, the place where Stanley was from, and discovered there were a lot of African-Americans living in Poland. And the assumption is if the person is Polish, you think automatically they must be white. But the fact is, black people live in all parts of the world. So if we can have a black aristocrat, a black owner of slaves, a black wealthy man, black Polish person, then I can do Streetcar for an African American cast. Isn't that wonderful?
That's great.
I look at just a few scenes from the movie still, and I get all kind of sweaty and humid, and you know, like there's no place like that. What's going on set wise, costume wise, lighting? How do you recreate that?
It's a monster. It's so much. Well, we do much what many theatrical companies do. We sit down in production meetings and we study the script and we talk about the concept. And pretty much we're rebuilding a realistic classic view of Streetcar. So we're staying true to the script. We're staying true to the setting. Costumes are true, period. 1940s, late 40s. And so it's just a matter of building and putting it up, and hopefully the finished product will be something that we can all marvel at.
Mm. And maybe the finished product will be something that's award-winning. And we're talking about this Kennedy Center theatrical competition, I guess you'd call it. Tell me more about it, because you all are heading from here to Daytona.
Oh, yes. Well, this production is not entered as a full participating production, so the production itself will not be judged. But our students annually are visited by adjudicators throughout the United States to judge their work, to actually critique their acting. And if their acting is deemed worthy, they are awarded what we call the Irene Ryan Awards. And they go on to the regionals and eventually to the nationals in Washington, D.C. at the Kennedy Center. Our university is fortunate enough to have many, many winners, even winners at the national level, as the top collegiate actor in the United States. In addition to that, we've had two productions to win the highest honors of being one of the best productions in the United States.
How about that?
Yeah, it's wonderful. I think Tennessee Williams crafted a really good play because it doesn't really focus on race, but it focuses on reality versus fantasy. And what he says, and there are many, many juicy lines in the play, but he describes a world that he believes is a better place in his fantasy. And therefore, as he writes through Blanche, therefore, he would rather lie and talk about the world that ought to be versus deal with a world that's corrupt. And that's what Streetcar is about.
Okay, so there's a parallel there. I wasn't even aware of that.
Yes.
But is that Tennessee Williams throwing his hands up and saying, oh, I'd rather go back to my fantasy? Is that escapism?
Well, some might call it escapism. But if it weren't for the idealist, where would we be? See, someone has to dream a dream before it can be made reality.
My thanks to North Carolina A&T State University Associate Professor of Theater, Miller Lucky Jr. The A&T production of A Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams is coming to the Paul Robeson Theater, opening on the A&T campus Thursday evening, February 16th at 8 o'clock, with evening and matinee performances continuing through the 26th. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. You're listening to Triad Arts Weekend on 88.5 WFDD. I'm David Ford. A Dozen Dresses, The Recollection is a fascinating multimedia work by local performance artist, photographer, writer, educator, and longtime Voices and Viewpoints commentator Diana Green. Part memoir, part dream, part psychology, the show uses clothing as a vehicle for remembering key events in life. Diana explores the blurry intersection of the past and present through provocative photos of and essays about her dresses from days gone by. You can see and experience A Dozen Dresses up close and personal at the always hip Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art, SECA. It'll be one night only on Thursday, February 9th at 7 o'clock with Cash Bar. And like all the ongoing exhibits at SECA, it's free. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. Last week, Diana dropped by WFDD. Here's part two of our interview. You're confronting, in some of these cases, a human being's most fearful emotion, which is shame.
No, this is not "look how great I looked" kind of exhibition. It's really like the vulnerability of who I was and as I grew. And there are moments of beauty and there's sorrow and mistake. It's all in there. It's loss, it's love, it's sex, it's everything.
Well, speaking of vulnerability, and this is, I mean, coming from a guy who's, I think maybe I dressed up as a woman once in junior high for Halloween, but I haven't worn a lot
of
dresses in my day.
Glad to hear it, David. Nice.
Just going to throw that out there. Mm-hmm. One of the dresses, a couple of them, are so delicate, and the one that spoke to this kind of vulnerability in a sense, to me, just that delicate dress, that white dress with the lace pattern in the back and the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with the model's back to your camera, this dress, so delicate. When did you wear it, and how did it make you feel?
This was a dress when I was a bridesmaid at my brother's wedding in Napa Valley, California. And it's a beautiful dress. It's really like a flapper dress. It's lace see-through with a nice slip underneath it, which is a look I really do love. And I didn't know it at the time that I took the photograph, but one of the buttons is undone, which I actually really like. And I think this is part of why making art is so interesting, because it shows you things. You have an idea of what you're looking for, and then it comes back at you, and it starts to teach you and show you and open you up to new ideas. So it was a very nice affair. Weddings are, of course, very beautiful and planned, but there's usually a little bit of drama behind the scene.
Oh, yeah.
And this one was a mixed bag. It was extremely exciting and beautiful, and yet there was a lot of family tension, and my mom was particularly having a really hard time. I was the sister who was chosen to be in the wedding. My sister was not. That made me feel pretty guilty, and it's a limp that I have in my life, that element. And so I was playing with some of that mixed beauty and a little bit of feeling like I don't want to be in the spotlight.
Hmm, interesting.
I want the dresses and the mood to be very sensuous and textural, and you want to touch them and feel them like you really can. Because when you talk about a dress, it's always about the fabric and about what it's made of and how it feels on your skin. It's a direct contact with you personally, physically.
I'm spending a lot of time looking at these photographs, you know, wondering what it, even though the model, the individual inside that dress is not the focal point, you've got the backs turned on all the shots. I'm still trying to get inside, interestingly, the mind of, because I know you, I'm imposing you on these photographs a lot of times, but, you know, what's going through this person's mind? How is this dress making them feel? What occasion was it worn in? All that good stuff. I think if I was going to look at this, I would kind of look through the photos first and then come back and read what you've written about them to see, was I anywhere in the ballpark? Not that that's important, you know.
No, I like that. I want the photograph to be a door that opens for whomever is looking at it, and to have it be full of a bit of mystery and ambiguity, because I think there's a lot of photographs are just sharp, crisp realism, and you think, oh, no, it's an apple, it's a dress. And I want there to be that dreamlike quality where you don't quite understand what happened there, but it's still real interesting.
There is a dreamlike quality in one of these photographs. I'm going to call it the bamboo photo, mm-hmm. in which the model is walking away from camera. Of all the photos, probably the most distant, in a black dress in this bamboo forest, literally walking a tightrope up a fallen bamboo. And you're saying all these shots were taken in Winston-Salem?
Absolutely.
Is it the turnaround across from the children's home, that bamboo forest?
It's right by Graylin.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There's a lot of great places in the city to photograph. You can pretend you're anywhere. But that one is, that's a dress that is very sensual, makes you feel extremely sexy. When you zip it up, you can't wait to take it off later. You know that's coming. And that's just also half the fun of being a woman getting dressed.
And that shot, I got to ask, because I mean, it looks like it almost would have had to have been photoshopped. I mean, these are all shots in the scene?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, I do shoot digitally, but I don't do very much post-production. I just balance out the color and do some cropping, but I'm very low key that way. So everything is as you see it, but you must know I took many pictures to get that one beautiful photograph.
Sure.
In these images, as important as the clothing is and the texture and the setting, I'm very interested in gesture and movement. So each one has its distinct physicality to it as well, what they're doing. And with her in the bamboo, she's just delicately going inside to kind of a private place, which I think that kind of intimate relationship is.
I got to ask, so did she have to sign a waiver in terms of accident?
She did. Her lawyer talked to my lawyer.
Okay. She's way up there. She's bouncing on a big bamboo pole. Don't fall.
That's why you work with young people.
Well, let's wrap up on an upper photo, and this one of you. I don't know who the model is. I'm imposing Diana Greene on all these models, but a young woman running up these steps with a bouquet in her left hand and this flowing white dress, and the light is coming out, and boy, it looks expectant in a good way.
It was supreme happiness. That was my high school graduation. We all had to wear a white dress. I had a Mexican wedding dress, which was really cool back then, ethnic cha-cha. And I was so happy to be graduating and leaving high school. I was like such a degenerate in high school. I didn't know for sure I would graduate, and I did. Yes, I did. And I was thrilled to be leaving and leaving the confines of a boarding school where I grew up and moving on. I was so happy to move on. I don't know about you, but that was a big moment for me.
And this one looks like a white summer dress. The model is dancing. I see more of the face of this model than any of the others in the group of 12. And then that cool use of light. How did you get that lighting effect there? It's almost like a disco lights. What are those?
Those are disco lights, actually. This was set in 1976. I was lucky enough to go to the inauguration for Jimmy Carter, and I was dancing all night long with my brother. And so this was the dress that I wore, and it was the disco era, and this is a nylon, trilobal nylon dress, which is all part of that period. And it is the best dress of the dozen. And I made little Christmas lights at the bottom, and I also just kept the lights low. It's very simple. I actually don't use any lighting, natural light, and then just these disco lights and then the Christmas lights. And I just wanted to capture that swirl and being lost in the music. And I think most of us can relate to that night when you just danced all night to every song.
Part two of my conversation with local performance artist, photographer, writer, educator, and longtime Voices and Viewpoints commentator Diana Greene. A Dozen Dresses, The Recollection, is a multimedia experience you won't want to miss, and it's one night only at the Southeastern Center for Contemporary Art. Seek up Thursday, February 9th at 7 o'clock with Cash Bar. Other exhibitions on view at SICA this month include Out of Fashion through March 4th and Margarita Cabrera's The Space in Between through February 19th. The best part is they're all free, and you'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. This is Triad Arts Weekend on 88.5 WFDD, your NPR News and Triad Arts station from Wake Forest University. I'm David Ford, and when we come back from this short break, we'll jump back in time to the 1930s and the pursuit of a life on the Great White Way. UNCG Theater presents Stage Door, next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. The University of North Carolina Greensboro boasts one of the finest theater departments in the country. But don't take my word for it. See it for yourself in Taylor Theater on the UNCG campus with a UNCG production of Stage Door. It's an American comedy about the exciting life in theater in the 1930s by Edna Ferber and George Kaufman. The play, produced by an all-student cast and crew, will run from February 10th through the 19th, and you'll find links to ticket information and more at wfdd.org/triadarts. Last week, UNCG actors John Dillon, Emily Gardenhire, and Philip Wright dropped by WFDD to talk about it. They were joined by professor and head of the theater department, James Fisher. Stage Door centers around a group of struggling young actresses in the 1930s who live in a New York boarding house where they follow their dreams to make it on the Great White Way.
You know, it always amuses me to hear a fella like you who makes a living out of pictures turn on Hollywood and attack it. If you feel that way about pictures, why do you work in them?
Well, we can't always do what we want to, Keith. After all, you're working in Hollywood and I'm selling blouses and David is just...
No, Terry, he's exactly right. I shouldn't talk that way and I don't very often, but... I'm a little worked up this morning. You see, I reread Jean's play last night, and I realized more than ever what a beautiful play it is. That's what's got me a little low when they come into the theater. What when picture people take a really fine play and put a girl like Jean in it. When they use a play like this for camera fodder is more than I can stand. Theater just means too much to me.
That's all right. It's a fine play. And you notice it's Hollywood that's doing it.
Keith, let's not get into an argument.
Well, it just shows how much you know about Hollywood. You're 5 years behind the times. They're crazy about fine things. Dickens and Shakespeare. They got a whole staff digging them up.
And where exactly were they buried?
All right, let's talk about something else.
If you go to a dinner in Hollywood, what's the conversation? Books and arts and politics. They never even mention pictures.
I suppose they write that on the dinner invitation. Instead of RSVP, it says don't mention pictures?
Oh, what's gotten into you two? You're a picture man and you're yelling about the stage, and you're a playwright and you're howling about Hollywood.
Well, at least I'm honest about it. I work in pictures, but I don't pretend to like it.
Who's pretending? I like it and I'm going back there. And what's more, I'm taking Terry with me.
You're what?
Keith, don't be absurd.
It's time somebody took her in hand and I'm going to do it. I'm going to marry her.
Now, Terry, you can't do that. I've told you why 100 times. You belong in the theater.
I'm going to throw it your way, Philip, right out of the gate here. What stands out in your training that you know you're going to grab that and move ahead with moving forward?
What it comes down to is what it takes to get into the program. So you have to already really want it. So I think it's all based in you. And if your desire is high enough, if your want is greater, I take what I take, what serves me best. A lot of things may not serve me, but when I come across something in my training and I know that that's going to serve me personally as an artist, that's what I take. And it's constantly learning and constantly shape-shifting and seeing what works, what fits in the right place.
How about a nugget, though, Emily? I want to call on you for, on a day-to-day, what sorts of things have resonated with you in the context of Stage Door, say?
I think the program here and the rehearsal process has been really focused, which is one of the things that's helped me the most. Growing up, I had a lot of different passions and a lot of things that I was trying to focus on at one time, and it made me unable to really fulfill each one with 100% of what I had. And I think with doing Stage Door, it's been really clear what I need to do and what I need to do on my own, what work needs to go in it before this rehearsal and this rehearsal. Mm. And just being in a program that's very focused and says, this is what we're working on now and this is what we'll work on later, that has really helped me to give 100% of everything I have to what I'm doing at that specific time. And really make some improvements on specific things little by little.
Give me an example of something you've had to do to become Terry Randall in this case.
Well, there's a lot of background work that goes into it. You know, the playwright only gives you so much in the text. And so it's really up to you to create the specific moments and kind of write and journal about what makes you you in the context of the play and the world that she's in. And so I think just writing and making decisions about what makes her the way she is what goes into it.
You just mentioned the writing and journal. Like, is that pretty standard in theatrical education, keeping a journal and drawing on that for characterization?
I think so. It has been for me, Certainly.
Yeah. Terry in the movie is from a wealthy Midwestern family, and it's their dad buys the play and all that.
Yeah.
Who's Terry Randall in the play? And tell me about your character.
I come from a family where not a lot of money, but you know, growing up, my mother, who died when I was a teenager, made everything seem really great. And I never really minded that we didn't have money. My dad's a doctor in the play, and I don't have siblings. But I've always grown up with this dream of being an actress on the stage, just like my mom. So I've grown up never seeing her perform, but hearing of how great she was and kind of always wondering about what, you know, the kind of role she played and the kind of things she did in the theater. And I think trying to follow in her footsteps and kind of fulfill that for her, fulfill the career that she didn't really get to finish because she left the stage and got married and had a kid, and here I am. And so I think part of the thing that makes her so much fun is just that she never gives up. And I think it's what a lot of us can identify with, just having to be rejected and keep believing in that dream and keep believing that one day it's going to happen for you.
So in theater, you don't just go out there and they just say, okay, I want you right away. That's not how it works.
No.
I wish.
I want to talk to your love interest, or one of the love interests. David Kingsley, tell me about your character. And leading into that, these are intense. I mean, just from that little read there, this is intense stuff. What's the challenge in being David Kingsley?
One of the biggest challenges that I had was being nice to Keith. to be completely honest, I mean, for the first couple of weeks, Jim kept giving me notes saying that he's a nice guy, he's a nice guy, he's a nice guy. And every time we did that scene that we just read, I always just wanted to hit him. It was finding that being able to stand up for her and being able to get what I want. And it was tough to find a way to stand up for what I felt was right and to do what I wanted and what I felt was beneficial for the girl that I loved and still be nice.
This is getting interesting because that tension is what I was feeling in that little read, and I didn't know why. But, Jim, you got to break it down for me. Why pass a note? What were you hoping to achieve with that?
I think there's a contrast between the two men. Philip's character is kind of a bull in a china shop. He just barges in and takes over, and he doesn't pay much attention to manners and all of that. And I wanted the contrast with John's character of someone who's a little more mature, measured. And he's in the business of meeting a lot of actors who want to get discovered for Hollywood. So he's learned how to control himself and to control what he says because people are always asking him for work and sucking up to him and whatnot. And he's had to have developed a kind of maturity that allows him to be a gentleman in all circumstances.
That's interesting. You use the word contrast. And in a great piece of music, you've got these, I think of it in terms of a color spectrum, you have little sparkly, shimmery sounds up top, low rumbling sounds in the bottom, some nice mid-range stuff. In theater, you've got to have contrast or it's a boring piece of wood.
Well, absolutely. I've made musical references in our rehearsals because the play really has an ebb and flow with very comic scenes, with even a tragic segment in the play, as well as sort of what you heard in this scene, a kind of dramatic debate between the main characters over what they want and who they are.
My thanks to UNCG actors John Dillon, Emily Gardenhire, and Philip Wright, and to professor and head of the theater department, James Fisher. Stage Door will run from February 10th through the 19th at Taylor Theater on the UNCG campus. You'll find links to ticket information and more on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. Well, that's all for today's program. You'll find podcasts of this show and Triad Arts Up Close on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. And as always, I'd love to hear from you. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.